This is Codex, a podcast exploring fictional worlds we love. I'm Phil.
And I'm Logan.
Every episode, we'll dig into a piece of world building from some of our favorite games, movies, and books. Today, it's my turn, and we're talking about The Oldest House from Control.
I know nothing about Control.
Good. That was my first question. I think you said to me in a chat a couple days ago that you didn't even see the trailer for this game.
Correct. Yeah, that was... I told you 100% of my knowledge of Control at that point, which was Black, Red, Lady, maybe Supernatural, also maybe this other game I also don't know. So,
oh, fantastic.
Yeah, we're pretty far out to sea here.
Okay, I picked a good one then. So the like super high level overview of what Control is. So it's a game made in 2019 by Remedy, makers of Alan Wake, Max Payne, and the weird Microsoft video game and also TV show Quantum Break.
Oh yeah. Okay. I remember that nightmare. I have played zero of those properties.
Oh, perfect. This is going to be a very weird, interesting thing then.
I did Prey? That feels close. Was Prey close to Alan Wake? That feels vaguely connected in my brain.
I mean, Prey
is... That might have just been the time dimension, though.
Yeah, that's Arcane Austin, I think. So, like, under Bethesda. But I would say, like, vibes-wise, they are close.
Okay.
Kind of weird, like, sci-fi smoke monsters.
Vaguely supernatural.
Yeah.
Is that our vibe?
Yeah. In Control, you play as Jesse Faden, who's a woman that's been searching for her missing twin brother for years, and finally finds the Federal Bureau of Control, which is an agency that deals with they refer to it as like the paranatural, which is kind of like supernatural, and in its history, it was the occult first.
Okay.
And so the entire game takes place within the kind of sort of FBC's headquarters.
Okay.
And at the time you're there, it's under attack by a paranormal phenomenon that the former director of the agency let loose. And specifically, today's episode is about their headquarters, this building that's called The Oldest House, which is an incredibly good name for a weird government agency.
Or a ska band. Yeah.
Also that.
Yeah. Is this like an X-Files kind of vibe?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So it's like X-Files, I think, and this is like my own media illiteracy showing through.
Yeah.
Like, especially Alan Wake and I think a little bit of Max Payne, maybe, is like very heavily Twin Peaks and stuff like that.
Okay.
Like the weird, far out, kind of irreverent but supernatural stuff. So this game has like just like the vibes are very uncanny and sometimes humorous in odd Lynchian kind of ways.
Yeah.
But also has like straight up horror moments. So I kinda the way I had originally scripted this out and like trying to think through like what my notes were going to be, I was going to like give you a very high level overview of what the building looks like.
Okay.
And I kind of have that, but the weird conceit of this game is if I were to tell you that this building, the place that we're going to talk about, is a government agency building built in the 1960s.
Okay.
And kind of still looks that way.
Okay.
How would you describe what you're conjuring in your mind?
Concrete brutalism?
Yeah. Okay.
Is that what we're looking for? Is that too specific?
Nope. That's perfect. So, yeah. So it's like concrete brutalism and like, you know, we're in the 60s. So it's a little bit of Mad Men in there, like red carpets and wooden desks and typewriters. And I think that there's a no smoking policy, but for some reason it seems like no one follows it. Like kind of that feeling.
Yeah.
And so the reason I bring that up is because one of the things that's like really like embedded in the psychological and like horror-y factor of Control, and like mm-hmm. is intrinsic to how The Oldest House works, is that it's based on Jungian archetypes. It's like Carl okay. Jung, the Swiss mm-hmm. psychoanalyst. So it like the reason that this building looks like every DMV or like brutalist building that you've seen built in the 60s is because it is a government agency, and it is pulling from the archetype of what government agency is. That's kind of a part of the collective unconscious of the human mind.
Okay, so we're going like almost Platonic in a way.
Yeah, somewhat, but without the...
But like kind consensus.
Yeah, yeah. So it is like kind of that, but it's based on, and we'll get into this a little bit later, but it's like based on like the universal inherited idea of something, but is separate from like the Platonic ideal of a chair is like, this right. is chair. Like this is what,
yeah.
in the world of forms
is the most chair that could be chair. Yeah.
yeah. Whereas this, it's like, this is not what government agency is, but this is generally what people conjure in their mind as like a collective think government agency gotcha. Is.
Okay.
And that's like real, pulled it from Wikipedia and do not have a degree in psychology level of understanding. But fair. Like, yeah, that's like kind of what it is.
So like the subjective version of.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And that like breaks down even to like the visuals in the game in general. So like the way that The Oldest House looks is like concrete. It's the brutal exterior. It has like
mm-hmm.
press board concrete inside, has the rugs. It has like indirect windows. There's no view outside or anything like that, but it's even the people inside. So there's, you know, it's faceless people generally, like not truly, but you know, you don't really see mm-hmm. a lot of people within the game. And then there's like funny, bland water cooler posters of like, you know, see something, say something, just like weird things yeah. that you would expect to be around filing cabinets in like a 1960s office.
Did this game presage like poorly trained AI art? Is that kind of the vibe?
God, there's probably something there.
It's just like revision to the mean, just expressed visually in like a really aggressive manner to the point of incoherence.
Yeah, and I hadn't really thought about it that way, but like there's something there, especially when we get into like how the house works. Like it also just does some uncanny weird shit that is like feels right. like. If you ask an AI to, you know, show me a picture of a hand or yeah. something,
and what's the color of freedom?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does some weird stuff like that.
What is the relation to reality here? Like, do we think the game is presenting to us reality as it exists in universe, or do we think something fucky is going on as the viewer?
Oh God. So there's a couple of things.
An answerable question.
So the way that the game kind of perceives reality is so the oldest mm-hmm. house itself is a physical location, like it is a manifested location in New York City.
Okay.
The thing that I really like about it also though is that you don't know that it's there unless you know that it's there. It is like an
okay.
imperceivable building unless it is like either you discover that it exists and therefore you can see it. Or,
okay.
like, the way it was originally discovered was that the Bureau in the 60s was, like, chasing after, like, a world event that was happening in the New York City subway tunnels, and then they stumbled across an entrance, and then now everyone in the Bureau who knows that it exists can see the building. It was okay. just, like, this so like weird blank space in the world that, like, now has meaning.
Like a room of requirement, sort of.
Kind of, yeah. that will not be the first Harry Potter reference that we make.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like that, where it just, like, appears. And then outwardly, it's just this, like, towering, massive, like, huge, huge, huge building that, like, is also very, like, Doctor Who TARDIS-like, where it is,
okay,
like, infinitely larger on the inside than it is on the outside. So it, like, takes up a, like, an actual footprint within New York, and it, like, clearly goes there's like clearly access to the subway tunnels underneath. But the, like, any description of the oldest house is like, this is what it looks like from the outside. Nothing is drawn to scale because we truly don't know, like, the limits within this building.
Okay.
And then you mentioned brutalist. So you are aware of what brutalism is then.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it's very, like, I don't know. It's a one of those things that, like, it just clearly named that for a reason.
Yeah. It's evocative. Check out the subreddit if you're not familiar with it. Like, yeah. After like four images, you're like, oh, I can draw every one of these buildings from memory now. Yeah. Yeah.
I realized that I had actually had a like brutalist building experience. Most of like my college classes were in the UW-Madison Humanities Building.
I was going to mention the Humanities Building. I didn't know if you wanted to divulge that or not, but I was like, that is one of my go-to images in my head of that.
It is like truly peak brutalism. The thing that I loved about that building, it was like you go into this building and from the outside, it's just concrete, but there's like tons and tons of inlets for light and like windows and stuff. I don't have any recollection of ever being inside the building and looking out a window. Like all of the windows were above level. And like it's impossible to look out. You're just in this like kind of odd void-like space, which mixed in with like the 70s of it all when it was constructed is just like oppressive in a very weird, like soulless kind of way.
Losing the time, the sense of time, there is a weird vibe. Like,
yeah,
you and I have spent many hours in theaters that have a similar sort of connection where you're just like, man, have we been in here for 3 hours or 4 days? I will believe yes. any number in between those two. And they're all equally probable.
Yeah, yeah. And the Boston City Hall out here is also a brutalist building. And that, it has like the same kind of uncanny thing, but like even further because it's like a government building. So it's like built with these mm-hmm. massive atriums when you walk in. So like the building is, it's probably like 8 or 10 stories tall. And it yep. feels like some of like the entry volumes that you go into are like that tall. Like it just goes all the yeah. way up and it's just surrounded by like concrete, like just giant jutting pieces of concrete that just are hanging up there as weird adornments.
They need you to know how small you are as soon as you walk through that door.
Yes.
It's important.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's very confusing because you never... I don't know, you just never know where you're supposed to go or like how you're supposed to navigate the building, and there's levels within levels, and it's a very like it's oppressive but in a strange way that's not normal for architecture.
You expect to round a corner and find a minotaur.
Yeah, exactly. So that's great because that is what the style of the oldest house is. Like it is that kind of like it's a brighter version of it, like very much like a video gamey version of it, and it's like it takes the weird 70s mishmash of textures and colors out of it. Like most of the spaces that you'll be in the oldest house are like it's almost always floor, walls, and ceilings are concrete, usually like pressboard concrete, so you can kind of see wood grain in it, which is a little weird since the spaces weren't necessarily built out of concrete. And then it's very bright white, like pure white highlights or like some like natural light that's filtered through like red or yellow lenses of some variety. And then, I mean, one of the places in one of the areas that you go to is it's called Central Research, and there's just like a fucking tree mm-hmm. in the middle of it. So like you just have a giant redwood growing through the center of this building. So there's like weird natural tones going on too.
That's a weird juxtaposition.
Yeah, which is kind of like the whole thing with the building. Like the more that you go mm-hmm. into it, the more that it's like these very sharp, precise lines of, you know, very angular concrete structures and very like boardroom meetings that have like slide projectors and all of those things. And then, you know, you mix that with like the occult. Like there's an entire section in the game or a section of research that's called the Ritual Division, and like this idea that like someone from a different plane of existence is contacting you. It's like this weird we're going to go all the way, no straight lines whatsoever. Like, time is mm-hmm. not like a linear progression. And then also now there's like sharp angles and like everything is clear cut.
So we're getting a lot of characterization environmentally.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, like the environment itself is like, and all of the characters in this game are actually just like very weird, just like large characters that I couldn't give you names of them, but they're like clearly archetypical characters of like, ah, yes, the, mm-hmm. the rough and tumble leader of the Rangers and the like head of research who always asks you questions and everything like that. But the building itself is like such a, it is like an omnipresent character. And when there's, you know, that is one of the only locations you go to in the game. So it's like, it has to be.
Yeah. What room was, did you say the tree was in?
It's in Central Research is what it's called.
Okay. So I guess like, yeah, growth symbolism yeah. makes some sense there.
Yeah. Yeah. There's also in research, there is all the way at the bottom, a like active threshold between another, it's like another actual dimension is butting into it. And that's, it's ooh. Like basically spawning a bunch of like a mold like substance. Like it grows like, and it kind of looks like, and it isn't necessarily mold, but it's like the closest analog they have okay. to it. So it's this weird, like you have a tree, a couple trees, I think, growing through the center of Central Research. And then as the further you get down, you're like going below the soil layer and you're like running into fungus and there are like mold people down there. And then it's this real ooh. Weird, like huge vaulted space. And then it gets narrower and narrower and turns into like caves. And then there's like critters living down there.
Like an Underdark sort of?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, yeah, with like old humans who had been turned into mushroom monsters. So actually, okay. very Underdark.
Yeah.
yeah. So one of the things that I kind of wanted to call out, mm-hmm. one of the like main ways that you play the game, it's a third person shooter. Like you run through the hallways. You use a altered item like object of power, which we'll get to, but mm-hmm. your like weapon, the way that you engage with the world, is this thing called the service weapon that has like supernatural powers, and it like recharges over time and it can change forms and all of that stuff. But you're running through this world and like blowing it up this way, but you also end up like picking up, there's like tons and tons of redacted memos that you end up picking up throughout the game.
Okay.
And so we've like barely walked through the entrance, and one of the first ones, I think it might be the first one that you pick up, like the first thing that you mm-hmm. can interact with in the world, when you walk through the entrance and get up to the metal detectors, is a notice that is called prohibited items.
Okay.
And I'll just read
seems
this.
Reasonable.
Yeah, I'll read this to you, and then we'll get less and less reasonable as it goes.
Okay.
So it says, certain objects are not allowed inside the Bureau. Recent incidents have necessitated an issued reminder on prohibited materials, unauthorized weapons, pagers, laptops, smartwatches, smartphones, smart gaming devices, anything smart, number two pencils, any object considered iconic representations of an archetypal concept, e.g., rubber ducks, ketchup bottles. So like going
okay.
so this like gets a little bit further into the like notion of like Jungian archetypes and stuff, but mm-hmm. but basically because the building was discovered in 1964, it repels most modern forms of technology.
Okay.
So like it literally will not allow you to take in smart devices or like alter them or do weird things to them.
So, like, will not withstand anachronism? Is it just electronic stuff? Like, what if you walk in with a newspaper from 2023?
I think it's mostly, like, technology stuff. Okay. Because, and like, to dig a little bit further into the archetypes, like, the archetype of a newspaper is not necessarily what is written on the newspaper. It's the concept of newspaper.
Okay.
So, like, cell phones have to be left out, but like there are plenty of desk phones that are littered throughout the office. And this, mm-hmm. it kind of gets at the weird thing because there's also computers. So there's like very much like desktop computers that look very, like what you imagine a like 1985 desktop computer to be, with glowing green screen, connected keyboard, like all of that like stuff. Like
a terminal.
Yes.
Almost.
Okay. Yeah. Which is like anachronistic for the time, but it still fits within that odd idea of like what a collective conscience would conjure when they think of like an office space like that.
Yeah.
And that kind of extends to things like a number two pencil and a rubber duck, because the thing about the rubber duck, which is just, again, like being your first entrance into this weird world that looks just like a normal corporate building, is that like a rubber duck is like kind of a perfect example of what one of these archetypal concepts is. Because like there's millions of rubber ducks, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone think about a rubber duck. We all thought about a different rubber duck.
Right.
Like a little bit different. Still a lot of overlap.
Yeah. There's not like an rubber duck, you know, like back to the Plato of World of Forms. There's not like this is rubber duck. But when we are all thinking of a rubber duck, there is like in the game, at least, like there is a certain amount of power that comes from an object that has transcended just being an object. Like it has become an object within the mind that is like transcends that like goes beyond simply this is a rubber duck to when we all think about a rubber duck together, just by like cosmic chance, like 8 billion people thinking about rubber duck at different times, like imbue that thing with a possible amount of power. And now we're like stepping out of the actual like Jungian theory and into kind of how the game works.
Yeah.
But that becomes a lighthouse to other like realms that are looking for like bright resonances that they can kind of latch onto. And then that's what causes something like a rubber duck to become an item that is imbued with paranatural power. And those are called altered items, which we'll kind of get into a little bit later. But like, just to like talk about why things like a rubber duck and a number two pencil is not really allowed within the oldest house. It's because they become invasion vectors for unknown or
kaiju, just
kind of random chance things that can cause like major problems within this weird liminal space that is neither like on Earth or in a separate plane. Like it feels like it's much more of a bridge.
Yeah. Is this like a vaguely SCP thing?
It is like concept? the most SCP thing.
I'm not like
no,
I don't know much on the topic, but that definitely is coming through.
Yeah, no, there's like a huge influence.
SCP Warehouse 13 feels kind of in that.
Yeah, it's very much. I'm sure that the creators have mentioned that it's like a huge influence on the work. Like it is.
Yeah,
inexplicable. Like it has to be. There's actually one of the.
If not, they're lying.
Yeah, yeah. One of the, I think it's the second DLC that they put out is called The Foundation, and it's about the foundation of the house, but it's also kind of like supposed to be a reference, probably to the SCP Foundation.
Wink and a nod.
Yeah. So.
Rat.
Yeah, there'll be some more fun stuff in a bit. So the oldest house is, for, you know, all purposes, like, it is this weird top secret headquarter base for the Federal Bureau of Control. And their job as a secret government organization is to contain, study, and control the paranatural phenomena as they pop up. So they study altered world events, which are things like, talking about the rubber duck, like when that resonance is achieved and, you know, another dimension uses the rubber duck as like a means to access like Earth in some way. Usually the people who go to check that out is the FBC.
Okay.
So like they'll check it out and then they'll end up storing those altered items like the rubber duck or anything that has really been touched by extra dimensional forces within the building. They generally like house those things. They study them. And then they study other things, like I mentioned earlier, like the astral plane. So like the notion that there is like a separate plane that isn't necessarily a different dimension that is beyond our own, that, you know, some people within the FBC are able to access.
Are all of these things known widely in universe? Like, does the average human know of the existence of the FBC?
No. Nope. And especially since they began occupying the oldest house, like they used to have just like a normal federal office building. But once they discovered the oldest house, they kind of moved all operations in there, which has like imagine like the powers of the oldest house not revealing itself unless you know that it exists.
Yeah.
Same thing kind of applies to most of what the FBC is doing. Like, it has become its own organization that kind of works outside the laws of the land, and also generally the laws of reality in like some really weird and mind bending ways.
The rent's probably cheaper too.
Well, it might come at some cost.
Yeah.
So inside this giant building, that there's a couple of like discrete sectors that you visit. It's all kind of, it's, you know, it's a video game. It's leveled out. So you ride the sector elevator, and you go all the way up to the top of the building as it is depicted on the elevator. And this is called the executive sector. It's the first place you visit in the game. You go in there, it's the office of the director. And it has like your typical cube farms.
Okay.
You know, like it has like all of these like grand spaces that are filled up with desks and people who get mail at them. Small like glass boxes that are conference rooms, like really super, super stereotypical. Like, this is what I expect the inside of like a 1960s office building to look like.
Yeah.
It's like cribbing a ton from, you know, what I remember of the offices of, in Mad Men.
Mm-hmm.
Like, super, super pulling from that stuff. The other important thing in the executive sector is the location within there called Central Executive, which is kind of this large two-story area. And directly in the center of it is the giant seal of the Federal Bureau. And then directly above it is an incredibly large inverted black pyramid.
Rad.
It's point, like, directly on the center of the seal. We will get there.
I know the seal is meant for like letterhead, but my brain thought of the animal and I was confused for at least half a second. Here's the Bureau's giant seal.
Yeah.
They keep it in the foyer.
Yeah, it's an altered seal.
Oh, right by the Black Pyramid of Death? Yes, right underneath the Black Pyramid. That's where, yeah.
Yeah. So the next section that you end up visiting is maintenance. And this is, you know, your stereotypical representation of maintenance. It's just a lot of tubes. Like, it's a lot of water pipes. It's a lot
series of tubes.
Yeah. It's a series of tubes. It's warehouses, like all of that stuff. There's also a giant power plant in the middle of it. And the weird thing about the power plant is that it's a person.
Okay.
The power plant is called, it's called the NSC, which stands for the Northmore Sarcophagus Containment. Northmore is the first director of the Federal Bureau of Control. And maybe he messed around with too many paranatural powers that involved fire. He willfully was locked up inside of this giant sarcophagus that harnesses his out-of-control paranatural power into power for the rest of the building.
Rad.
Which is just fun.
So he's like a fire elemental kind of.
Yeah, kind of. It sounds
is
like.
Is he having a bad time in there?
I don't know. They don't really touch on it. Like, that's kind of like one of the weirder things about this is that so much of the game just like greets you with, hey, check out this weird thing. And then they say, we're not going to talk about that really. Like, that's just the world we live in. Like, the old, like, two or three, four directors ago now just lives in that thing, and we don't know if he's alive. We don't know what's going on. He's just, you know, he's just having his flame on moment, just going crazy in there.
Because there's a wide range of potential vibes of that, I feel like. Like, is dude just having a fun time on his hamster wheel, or is he screaming for a death that will never come?
Yeah, or is he just, like, so, like, at this point, all he is just burning heat, and there's, like, nothing left of the person who walked in there.
Oh, like, consciousness is no longer, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. The only, I think there's, like, one memo that mentions it, and it just says that he, like, willfully stepped down as director and walked into the chamber, because he, like, believed in the Bureau so much that he just would, like, sacrifice himself to keep it alive.
See, that implies the personhood was intact before walking into there.
Yeah, and I think, like, game time, though, that was, like 30 or 40 years prior to when you step into the game.
Yeah.
So who knows what's there now? But, yeah, I think at the time he was, like, ready to go. Realized this is my purpose. I will do this thing.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, there's maintenance. That's kind of, like, the most interesting thing there. There's like other stuff. We don't have time to talk about the janitor. But okay. Suffice to say, the janitor's office is in maintenance. The janitor is an interesting character. Maybe someday we'll talk about the janitor.
All right. Fair.
The next section is research, which is what I kind of talked about before. That's the place with the giant like redwood tree in the middle of it.
Yeah.
There's like smaller sections in there. We'll like loop back to some of those, but
okay.
There's parapsychology. That's where rituals division is, and then dimensional research. The second to last spot is containment, which is houses this thing called the Panopticon, which is a giant containment area for all of the altered items of the Bureau. There's investigations, which is like the detective section that's dedicated to investigating the altered world events as they happen, and like figuring out what's going on. Although mysteriously that has been shut down since 2017. The game takes place in 2019. So something happened there.
Something.
And then the last section, which is not really like a bespoke level on the like on the actual section elevator or sector elevator, but it's this notion of thresholds.
Yeah.
Thresholds. Like they're border points between one reality and another where something has resonated and has like caused this to happen.
Does one subsume the other? Like, is this a violent process? Or can two realities inhabit the same space without, like, negative effects?
I'm not sure. I'd have to, like, look around a little bit. I don't know if it's replacing anything or if that threshold goes away. If there is, like, parts of the oldest house that exist. There are, as you, like, walk around the environments, there are tons of doors that are blocked off. Which is, it's, you know, it's a funny video game thing of like, oh, look, it's a door you can't access. But the thing that's like so compelling about it is that the doors exist, first of all. Like this giant brutalist building doesn't need to have like more doors in the concrete. But they're covered in this, they're like spray foamed closed. But they have these giant like pyramidal like blocks that run across them.
Okay.
It's made out of black rock that we'll also reach to when we talk about some of these thresholds.
Mm-hmm.
But it is like a stone that is blocking off these doors that are like spray foamed closed. And it's kind of implied that beyond those is either where the house has shifted, or it is like a threshold that has been closed off. That's like no longer active or like that place back there is no longer accessible for, you know, XYZ reasons.
Interesting.
Yeah. So
this is all within the Panopticon, you said?
This is throughout the entire house is that stuff.
Throughout the entire house. Are those, okay, yep. Those like sealed waypoints.
Yeah, so the sealed waypoints are all throughout, and the thresholds kind of pop up wherever. It's like not clear what the catalyst is for some of them. Some of them are like very much part of the story of the game. But most the couple are just like, this appeared and now we access it. So and that kind of, I guess, like gets at the notion that like the way that the game is set up, like the structure of the oldest house is you hop in the elevator and you go to the different levels.
Yep.
But there's no like indication that the elevator is going up or down.
Okay.
And there's also no real indication that when you stop at like these control points that you like claim,
yeah,
that fast travel is not part of the game,
right? You don't know if you've moved through physical space.
Yeah, it's not clear if like you, when you click fast travel on the menu, if that means that like, okay, Jesse Faden is now walking from one area to another.
Yeah,
in several cases it's made abundantly clear that translocation is the thing that you can do. So there is like power within the house, and then there is also like the house does not work in a linear way that like a typical office building would. And some of the trappings of the office building make it seem like it is simply presenting it to you that way because that is the way that the human mind conjures what office work is, and also is perhaps the best way for like humans to actually interact with the building as it is. So that's like how you see it, but the weird part is that the building still has a mind of its own.
Is it permanent?
No.
Okay.
And that's part of the shifting. Like that, and here comes the second Harry Potter reference.
Yeah, okay.
I was gonna say.
So you know in the like depiction of the giant staircase, you know, all the stairs move around and like they have a mind of their own and they kind of go to different places. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how the house functions. Except it's everything. Like the walls, the floor, the ceiling, the trappings of the house, they just move. Like it's like referred to in the game as a building shift.
Okay.
And the idea is that the further you get away from what is defined as the core of the building, the larger mm-hmm. and more severe the shifts are.
The AI hallucinating.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So like the further you get away, you start to see like these like waveforms of concrete moving in and around the floors and like cutting off access to areas. Sometimes it just like fully that there's a section. One of the floors I didn't mention is protocols and processes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because the building shifted so hard that it like fell to the foundation of the building.
Damn. Okay.
Yeah. It like moves. It like crushes people. Like bad things happen.
Does it have intention?
Ooh, good question. I don't know. It's not made clear. It's simply that like these are weird spaces that need to be maintained. It's unclear if it's like dynamic on purpose or if the space is just dynamic based on like the properties of the world itself.
Of that reality, yeah.
Because the way that you kind of go through the game and then kind of it's explained in the world as well. One of the other directors, not the one in the giant heat power plant, discovered this notion of using the occult rituals, basically, to stabilize parts of the game or stabilize parts of the oldest house.
Yep.
So you like go to like claim a control point, which is these checkpoints in the world. And sometimes what that ends up doing is stabilizing a ritual and like becoming more in touch with the house to clear up some of those dynamic volumes of concrete shifting around. So you'll like watch it happen as you claim this control point, and the volumes of like shifting and moving concrete will stabilize and they'll go back to, oh, look, this is like a large rectangular room that has adornments and trees and plants. And now you can walk through it. But because a destabilizing force was in the house, it means that like it didn't do that before and you fixed it.
Is that like a Metroidvania kind of mechanic in game where you're like unlocking new sections of the map and returning back to other areas back and forth?
Yeah. So you'll like stabilize that. It's also, it's a way to like unlock shortcuts. So you'll like reach the end of a section and then you'll stabilize a control point after a boss battle. And now you're like loop back to the other part of the map.
Now you have your Zelda-esque drop down to the beginning of the dungeon.
Yeah, exactly. That also kind of like the weird paradigms of how the house works, like don't follow any like real measure of physics sometimes. Like it doesn't follow natural laws. Like there's kind of like a fun experience that you have going through, I think it's the Prime Candidate Program is like one of the like subsection offices within, I think, Containment. And you walk into the room and you see in the distance that the room is twisting. So the floor around you is like if you took a like strip of paper and you held both, you know, long edges and you slowly twisted one and it started to angle up and begins to like enter into a twist. That's what the room is. Like there is an object that is there that is causing this reality distortion, but it is not odd to the like gravity of the room. Like you don't like enter a certain part and then you
Mobius
fall.
Strip kind of thing.
Yeah. So you just do that. And there's a couple of weird sections that either like present things as if you're looking through a kaleidoscope, or like that weird twisting undulation, or like just truly infinite spaces, which is kind of fun too. But all of those happen the further and further you get, and it starts to like shift from like understanding the world through the lens of like how we would expect a like an actual building to be constructed into this more like dream logic, kaleidoscopic, like floating people kind of feeling that feels more and more surreal the further you get.
Yeah.
If you were to guess, is this game better or worse if someone was on drugs?
Oh my god.
Because it feels like it would either just, everything would just kind of wash over you as normal and not even considering asking the question, or it would just be like really horrifying in a really like eldritch mind-bending way.
Yeah, so the thing that I didn't mention is that this is predominantly like a horror style game.
Okay,
so it's maybe experiencing the building would be nice, but
I wondered, because a panopticon is a prison. Yeah, I believe, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's actually where we're going next.
Okay. I've been told that many times.
Yeah. the game itself is like very horror centric. So like part of the reason that like the brutalist structure of the building is like kind of really important is that the force that you're fighting there is this entity that's called the Hiss. And it's like a sound based thing that like,
okay,
gets into your head and like basically turns you into like a thing that it is controlled, like a possession of some variety.
I like this. Okay.
But it is like the way that it depicts that is using this like really bland and void like white and concrete setting as a place to flash giant red, like blood red spotlights to be like, hey, look, there's a bad guy over there. And it takes over the environment. So some of the like those building ships I was talking about before, like sections are blocked off because the Hiss have interacted with those ritual points and broken the ritual. And those places are like possessed and they are glowing red. And it is like you have replaced all of the lighting in the level with this like bright, bright red spotlight on it. And it is like, I think that that's the part where I couldn't imagine playing this game on drugs because like,
okay,
it's like spooky and it is like atmospheric and maybe it would be cool to like see all of the weird spaces happening, but like there's not like a non-violent way to go through it and just experience the world. Yeah. Like it just, those guys pop up and they get you.
There's no Minecraft-esque like exploration of just the, or what was that puzzle game that came out a couple years ago now.
Oh, The Witness?
That was yeah
that,
like to me that seems like a thing that you're like, oh yeah, I'm gonna smoke and then this game is gonna just be how my brain disappears for 14 hours straight without me realizing time has passed. It doesn't sound like this.
No,
that
if you could...
it very intentionally gestures in that direction and then turns it into a nightmare.
Yeah, it definitely turns it into a nightmare. Speaking of which, that perfect segue into the Panopticon.
yeah, that's a thing I know a little bit about.
Okay, cool.
Like history of Panopticon as a concept, I think, but obviously not within the context of the game.
Yeah, so I mean, what do you know about the concept itself?
I want to say that was Jeremy Bentham.
Yep.
Who is like one of the early utilitarianists, maybe the first to use that term.
Yeah, he invented the term.
Yeah. Okay. And then it's that's like your standard like watchtower in the middle, can see everybody, and then we can kind of have some philosophical debates on whether it matters if there's anyone in that tower or not.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So that's the conceit, is that, you know, it's a giant ringed room that everyone can see into. The notion is that there is, you know, one guard in that central tower, and the guard cannot perceive everyone at the same time, but the notion is that he could be looking at any one of them, so they all behave better.
Yeah.
So that's basically what the Panopticon in the containment sector is. Instead of a central tower, there's kind of a central gantry system that is like bridges that you can walk between to allow you access to the different cells. There's a separate surveillance room, you know, modern technology. Like you don't have to be in the center of the prison. You can be outside the prison and watch from the inside.
Yeah.
So there's that. And this is the place. It's not a prison for people. Well, except for one specific person, but it's not a prison for people predominantly. It's a prison for all of the altered items that the Bureau has got. So some fun highlights are altered item 49KE, which is the red light. It is a four-way traffic stoplight.
Okay.
And it is the most, like, child-based Jungian archetype. When you think of a red light, green light, it is literally an object that will set you back an undefined amount of space from it if you try to move toward it when the light is red.
Ah, okay. Yep. So stoplight game
writ
into,
into
being. Is that presented as, like, a fun, whimsical thing? Or, like, oops, we pushed you and you rematerialized inside this bulkhead, and now you get to scream for a death that will never come?
Luckily, it doesn't do that.
Okay.
Each of the altered items have, like, those little memo write-ups about them. There's usually, like, here's a description, and then here are the containment procedures for it.
Okay.
The red light, I think, was, like, a small town, like, a single stoplight town that had, like, this light in it, and the Bureau came in because too many people were being, like, slightly affected by this, and their watchwords caught onto it, and they went in and snagged it.
Okay.
The more, like, insidious, like, spooky horror ones, and I guess, like, this is kind of the perfect juxtaposition, like, oh, look, fun novel red light that just kind of, like, shoots you back to the
literal children's game.
Yeah. The next one is called Altered Item 10-KE, and this is called the Arctic Queen, and it is a refrigerator from the 60s.
Okay.
And there are three crayon drawings on it, held on with magnets, and all of them are signed from a child named Michael. The drawings have attempted to be, but cannot be removed, altered, or destroyed. And the refrigerator was, in its history, had survived with its drawings completely intact after the Grand Central Hotel in New York collapsed. And since then, it's been reclaimed by the FBC, and it's stored in the Panopticon. And you run into this wonderful character whose name is Philip, and it is his job. He is on fridge duty, because the way that you contain the Arctic Queen refrigerator is that you must maintain eye contact with it. If you don't maintain eye contact with it, bad things happen. And unfortunately, the circumstances of the game, like the Hiss invasion, all of this stuff, means that poor Philip has been stuck there for over 24 hours, staring at a refrigerator that may or may not have murderous intent. So it's like a whole job that, like, in the Panopticon, someone does literally have to always be perceiving this particular altered item. And unfortunately, after some back and forth, you do not say Philip. He is inexplicably, from the moment you look at him through the glass window and you say, hey, dude, I'm coming to get you. It's going to be okay. You walk through a door. You hear him say, oh, no, something's happening. You walk through the other door, through the airlock, and you walk in, and he is just a red smear, and the fridge is just sitting there.
And the wall, yeah.
And it's not quite clear what the fridge does. Like, did it eat him? Who knows?
So that's...
You didn't see it.
Is that like a... Is the...
Okay. I have a lot of thoughts. Like, is that, I wonder if that's related to kind of, like, the concept of the light turning off, like, when you're a child, since you don't really see how the fridge light happens. I remember that being a somewhat confusing topic for a very small
human. Oh, yeah. Okay.
So I wonder if that has something to do with the observing. There's also, like, that's kind of the opposite of the idea of the Panopticon, where it doesn't really matter if you're being observed, just the suggestion that you're being observed produces the same result. So it's interesting that they've inverted that with the fridge inside of the Panopticon.
It's a weird thing, because some of them, like the red light, is so clearly, I get it, like, this, it's a red light and it's playing the red light game, and I can see the cultural connection to that. Some of them are a little bit more esoteric, so like the fridge, like I don't, like the fridge light is actually a good pull. Like I couldn't think of what the actual, like, cultural connection to, like, okay, well, why is this a murderous fridge? Like, what does this have? Like, there's a story about,
also,
like,
fridges killed a lot of kids back then, man. I wonder if it's just,
it could just be that, like the historic context.
Yeah, like small children used to get locked inside of refrigerators, and that didn't go great. Those doors used to be way heavier and harder to open.
That's interesting.
Or latched externally.
Would you explain why there's like I know a name for the kid on there and everything?
Yeah, like I wonder if it just the kid climbed inside the refrigerator to see to observe what would happen. What like how does the light go on and out? What happens in here that I don't understand? That's why I don't. Do you remember any of the old fridges we used for sets? Always had like double hinging, locking mechanisms on them.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if that's what it is.
That's my headcanon now. The other, like, I don't know if they're intentionally evoking a bunch of philosophical topics, but also, Berkeley, I think. One of his main theses was that, like, things don't exist unless they're being observed.
Oh, yeah.
And God observes all and therefore preserves existence.
Oh, interesting.
Since they're, I mean, the Bentham connection might just be because, like, prison. That's just, like, a good way to do a prison.
Yeah, like, it's a good concept.
Might have literally no philosophical intent at all. I don't know if they're leaning into utilitarianism at all anywhere else. But
yeah, I'm not sure. I didn't really dig that deep into it. But, I mean, literally the people who can use the powers are para-utilitarians. So, I mean,
oh, okay. Well,
there's at least that. Like a connection.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not seeing anything in the supplement for the fridge that says it's literally the person who owned the fridge left the building because like the son was there playing with crayons and then the building came down while the owner was still a block away.
Yeah.
Oh, they found the kid. Oh, he was in the fridge. It says city workers found Mikey later beside the fridge, so the fridge saved him or something. But it murdered poor Philip, unfortunately.
At least Philip.
At least, yeah. They not had to come less up with than procedure. Philip. Yeah. they had to figure out the procedure somehow.
Yeah. Some amount of trial and error was perhaps present.
Yeah.
There could be a whole string of Philips.
Unfortunately, there probably were.
Maybe Philip is like the Dread Pirate Roberts of the FBC, and
it's always
being Philip is a death sentence. So you release your personhood and subsume yourself into the role of Philip when you
just be fridge duty. Go in with
the fridge. Yeah, it's like a living death.
Oh yeah, the description here says that the item's effect is fatal to all organic entities within a considerable range. Cause of death is critical internal trauma with no outward signs of injury. The range of effect is estimated to lie within a 5 to 10 foot radius. Due to extreme risk to bureau staff, no plans to define the range exist at this time. So there you go. It works
nightmare fridge.
This big, kinda.
Yeah.
So that's the Panopticon. Like you end up like flying through the space because you learn how to levitate from a television. And then you like navigate the space. You find your brother there. He's the human that they are keeping within the Panopticon, and he is in a glass contained box. Well, he would be. He got out, but he was within a glass contained box.
Magneto-esque.
Yes, very Magneto-esque. He's very Magneto coded.
Your standard Magneto.
Yeah, you know the archetype of
Magneto. All the baggage that comes with it.
Yeah. So that's kind of containment. There's other stuff there. There's storage spaces for different altered world events. So one of the ones that you go to has a giant, it's a D12. What's a D12? A decahedron? It is a solid dodecahedron. That's just chilling there, just out of rock. It's like 20 feet tall. It's huge. And then the other like containment area that you visit is for the Ordinary Wisconsin AWE, which is involved with your character. You get it. It's called Ordinary, but something not ordinary happened there. And it's just literally the entire town dump is there to be like combed through for pieces of kind of the MacGuffin of the game.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like the weird thing about the oldest house in general is that it is somewhat it's unclear what part of the oldest house is constructed and what part of it is conjured in kind of a room of requirement kind of way. Like the spaces are connected and they touch, and you continue to like stabilize these control points so that you can access more and more parts of the house. But it's not like it's sprawling. Like it's not how you would expect a building to work. Like the same yeah. level you're in that is like the containment has this like panopticon that kind of goes on forever to the ground. It goes on forever to the ceiling. Is in the same place that, you know, you traipse a little bit further through containment, and then you end up at the transit tunnels, which is the connection to the New York subway that then kind of like branches out to the storage for the that dodecahedron, and then also to the entire town dump. So like that's the access for outside things to get into the bureau, but it's built up in a way that is unclear if like we found an entrance from the subway and therefore we built the section here, or if it's simply that the house is functioning in kind of a rumor requirement way where it is starting to show you what you need to see and that you can stabilize it in the way that it is and the configuration that you like it. But that kind of leads into the intent question again too. Like does the oldest house have intent in what it is doing? Is it being controlled by the board, which is the entity, the powers that be, from the astral plane? Mm-hmm. Like how is it doing all of this? And it's one of those kind of like, I don't know, nice mysteries where it just doesn't tell you. Just like this, here you go. Like this is how it is, and this is how it was found, and this is what we're doing now.
Yeah, it sounds like they're not super concerned with giving you answers. And like it's presented to just be taken as read.
Yeah, like this is just the world. Like this is how it is, and like this is how you will experience it. Yeah, it's interesting. And it kind of like gets, you start to get into some of the headier stuff, like once you move to research. So like that's the, again, like looping back to the big atrium space with the large tree. Like within there are separate like other divisions. So there's parapsychology, and that is, it's a division that's specifically devoted to the study of psychic or paranormal phenomena, specifically thought to be beyond scientific understanding. Like this is where you start to get into the very occult roots of the organization. So one of the sections is just called Luck and Probability. And it is a very like small space, and you walk in and everyone's desk has like a four-leaf clover or one of those porcelain cats with the rocking paws. There's a person that's studying the a horseshoe, like whether it's up or whether it's down.
Okay.
There's the golden fish. I'm trying to think. I think that might be all of them. There might be one more. But there's a separate lab space next to it that houses a roulette wheel. And it's like a fun achievement of the game is that if you set up all of the things properly in the space exterior and you bring the golden fish in, you align all of the things, like you have maximum luck, you hit the roulette wheel and you'll hit a 7 and you get a fun outfit. But it's like studying the human perception of luck and probability, like where like does luck exist, and like can you like push it with all of these different things, like how can we study like the impact of that stuff?
Can it be influenced manually?
Yeah.
You say this is a horror game, but this sounds very Q Branch to me.
That's like the irreverent part. Like some of it is very like novelty and weird, and then sometimes it's like real jump scare cutaway to the main antagonist bathed in red light doing like the most evil smirk you've ever seen, and then you know the board talks to you in weird myth. Real. It's horror game by appearance and premise, but the place that it takes place in is like kind of X-Files by way of The Office sometimes. Just like real nonsensical weird things are happening, but it's all psychological in a like a real like Twin Peaks David Lynch kind of way.
Yeah. I suppose if it was all like gas all the time, then like some of that is, I'm sure, is just to, you know, give your nervous system a chance to have a break.
Yeah, just like cool. Like,
yeah. And I would assume that the comparing those two states against each other kind of makes the impact a little harder when things turn upside down.
Yeah, like when real stuff happens, it's like, yeah. It's way more powerful when you're walking through this weird, funny, stereotypical office, and then all of a sudden, like, someone whose name is, like, Junior Officer AB79 shows up and is, like, gunning you down.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird vibe. But it like, plays with interesting concepts, and it does the thing where every part of the oldest house you go to ends up feeling like discrete and different. Like, it is like one generalized building that it has all the pieces you would expect of a federal agency who like does this stuff. But then there's like weird stuff like luck and probability, where it's like, okay, well, let's see what happens if you flip a horseshoe upside down or right side up.
Mm-hmm.
Just very strange. One of the other ones in parapsychology, which is, I guess, like the flip of that, like you take the irreverence of luck and probability, and then you go to the synchronicity lab, which studies synchronicity. It's like the concept that like circumstances that appear meaningfully related but don't have a causal connection. This notion that like circumstances are conspiring to like have some sort of connection that are
the ripples in time,
yeah,
kind of thing,
but they're not causal. So like a funny example that they have in the game is that one of the tests they did was they placed TVs all around the world in like 6 or 7 different locations.
Mm-hmm.
And then they all put them in identical rooms.
Okay.
So they constructed the rooms. They're all ordained the same way. Like everything was exactly the same. And in all of the rooms except one, they changed the channel to the same channel. Expecting that the one that wasn't changed would flip over and it would like, you know, sync up with the rest of them.
Yeah.
And it didn't. So it didn't work. They didn't like prove that hypothesis. Mm-hmm. But what they did end up doing was realizing that the agents responsible for monitoring those rooms all started to say that they had like depressive states and like were experiencing like some sort of like negative, like mental turmoil, which lined up exactly with one of the clinically depressed members of the team. So the synchronicity was not achieved with
gotcha.
The television, but it was achieved with the people who are perceiving the television, which is like in a nutshell, like that is synchronicity. Like the outcome that you expected to have like causal effects didn't happen, but instead something else happened.
Doesn't adhere to first principles at all.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about the hypnosis lab just for a second.
All right.
So the hypnosis lab is basically a bunch of people who are staring at an old X-ray light box from like the 50s or 60s. Because somehow it is tethered to the astral plane. So, you know, astral knots, as they are called. They can touch this object and they are transported to the astral plane, which is it's just like a milky void. Like it's a white void that goes on forever in all directions, except for these kind of floating platforms of black stone with kind of gold veining in it. And always above you is an inverted black pyramid.
Like from the entrance?
Yes. Yeah. So the thing that is talking to you throughout the game is called the Board, capital B.
Yep.
And it is an entity that is contacting you through assumed that black pyramid, and it like rests within the astral plane. So like you basically go through a mindscape. So you touch these objects, a couple of them. So like the X-ray light box, there's an old TV, which is the one I mentioned earlier that you like levitate through. So that's how the abilities of the game are given to you. Like you touch these objects and then you go to the astral plane, but mentally, not physically. Like you astral project into the astral plane. But there is always this inverted pyramid. And it's the one that's in Central Executive. It's also believed to be the entity that gave the service weapon to the first director. So it has like some amount of agency, has a connection to the oldest house. And it seems like the house is stabilized through like rituals that also incorporate the board and like the astral plane in some variety.
Interesting.
So that's, we'll get back to the astral plane in a little bit, but the last like big section that like connects to this is the thresholds.
Mm-hmm.
So the one I mentioned before in Central Research is this like mold world that is kind of working its way up through the building. And then kind of the coolest one that I really mm-hmm. like is it's called the Black Rock Quarry. And the Black Rock Quarry is accessible through maintenance. So you kind of like go through all this stuff.
Okay.
After a while, you get access to it. And you walk into this quarry after going down a very, very far elevator. And you walk out and you see the night sky. And it's like okay. this really weird moment because like, again, like you're in this brutalist building. Like
you're in the basement.
Yeah, yeah. Like everything feels like a basement. Like there's no windows. You don't see the outside world. There's all this indirect light coming from different places. And then you go down an elevator and then you walk out onto just an outcropping and you see like the most beautiful, like Aurora Borealis, like Northern Lights mm-hmm. sky, except it's not ours. The quarry is specifically a different location, different dimension, a different area that
okay.
like the threshold between the oldest house and the Black Rock Quarry is stable enough to where, the department has like started actually mining the rock there.
Is this what the pyramid is made out of?
It's unclear this is what the pyramid is made out of, but it is what lines all of the containment units in the Panopticon.
Yeah.
So the stone here has like a special property that it has like special plot armor against altered items.
Mm-hmm.
So those doors that I was talking about before of like potentially closed off thresholds that have this weird black stone yep. on it, that's what it is.
Gotcha.
You'll see like standing partition walls kind of this stuff. That's mm-hmm. holding back the mold spread in some places. Like it has some property that causes
okay.
the like paranormal stuff to either stop or be contained or like nullify it in some way. And luckily the access to this area of the oldest house is like pretty stable. So there's like a whole mining operation going on down there. Like they're pulling it out and they're mm-hmm. putting it up in the house. I didn't mention this before. But there are these places called fire breaks throughout, basically like throughout different really important sections. So when you're at the Panopticon, in order to get there, you have to walk across this thin railingless concrete bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And both sides of this void that's probably like, 30, 40 feet wide is lined infinitely. Fading off into the distance in all directions with this black mm-hmm. rock. So it's
the Bridge of Khazad-dûm.
Yeah, basically. Several of them.
Don't want your Balrogs escaping.
Yeah, there is later, there are broken bridges, so maybe the Balrog yeah. did escape.
Or it fell.
Yeah, yeah. So there's, like, that stone is used there as well. Like, it contains and, like, quarantines off sections of the building. But so you're like in this quarry and you're there to get a special prism that you can use later for other stuff. But like the thing that's like super cool about it, and it's only even like mentioned it one single note, is that people who spend too much time there, like when they first started,
mm-hmm.
there was like an entire group of miners that were in this weird trans-like state, and they were looking all together off in a single direction, and they were all looking at a city. It's not clear if it's a ruin, and I don't think you might be able to see it from the game. I'm not sure if you can. I never actually looked, actually.
Ooh.
But it's there, and they have like gotten to the point where there are expeditions that they do like every year or something, simply because they tried to reach it and they never could. They would go there, and like either the team would disappear, they'd loop back around, like it just, you couldn't get there. So they just gave up.
Mm-hmm.
But there, it's like these little mysteries that are just like peppered around. I'm like, oh yeah, you're in like a whole completely different dimension, and also there's a city over there, and you just can't get to it.
It sounds very much like picking up a show on like season 5.
Yeah,
where you're just like, you are in the middle of things that clearly have some amount of explanation. Some of it's sort of just given to you, and some of it you're going to have to piece together, or because you're not able to go back to the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. And it like, even, I mean, I just played through it. I just finished this game yesterday again. I've like beaten it twice now, and I still like, it's one of the only games that I've sat down and just like actually read every single note twice and just like really like, okay, well, what are the weird things going on here? But to that point of like, okay, well, is this supposed to be prior knowledge or not? The notes are all redacted.
Mm-hmm.
There's like vital verbs and like descriptors that are just completely redacted out of these notes, and it just was redacted. Like there's no way, like you can't like throw it in, like you can't look at the source files, like you can't pull the redacting off of it. Like there's just giant black gaps in a bunch of this stuff.
Yeah, that remain questions.
Yeah, yeah. And some of them, like throughout the game, like the whole thing of like parapsychology and like understanding things that couldn't be scientifically understood, like that's also mm-hmm. like one of the people you interact with through like video and stuff throughout the game is the head of research. And so many of the like video briefings that he gives on like these slide projectors is how unknowable it all is. And like how like unfathomable some of these things are, and how devoid of like the ability to use science to reason your way through the weird dream logic of all of this stuff. And it just like bifurcates and bifurcates and bifurcates into like, oh, well, now you're in a different dimension. Yeah. And oh, there's also different planes of existence. And there's other like extra dimensional entities that are here through a different way than the normal way. And also there's like a rubber duck that you have to chase around because it's been imbued with power from something.
It sounds like they're replicating, like you said something along the lines of like, you're not, like with the parapsychology, you're not meant to understand everything.
Yeah.
And it sounds like they're kind of replicating the player experience with what's happening in game there, where the player's not meant to understand everything in its entirety either.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's unclear how much the game understands that it's a game. And it's kind of, it does some of my favorite fourth wall.
If or aware fourth wall. Yeah.
Yeah. But it does it in an interesting way where like we're kind of getting far afield of the place at this point, but like the board itself, yeah. It's the communication entity that's in the astral plane, but is also communicating to you through the objects that it has touched. So like the service weapon is like a conduit. There's also a thing, a place that you visit in the game that's called the hotline chamber, and it is a giant red phone that doesn't have a dial, and sometimes it rings, and you walk over to it, you pick it up, and the board can talk to you and like kind of gives you an idea of like where you're supposed to go, or like where it is needing help next. But throughout your conversations with the board, it only speaks to mm-hmm. you in like guttural sounds that are then turned into subtitles on the screen. And I think it's like assumed that like Jesse, the main character, can somehow understand yeah. what the board is saying, but we as players cannot, which is this weird, like, okay, so am I inhabiting Jesse or am I like experiencing this game as a viewer? Because other times, like when you touch the television and you go into the astral plane to like learn how to levitate, it's a tutorial sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, here's how you yeah. do it. And, like, there are game prompts that show up.
Look over here, Master Chief.
Yes. Yeah. But there's game prompts that are just, like, you know, press and hold A to jump and, like, hold it yeah. in order to levitate. Which is, like, that's clearly game UI. Like, that's showing up. That's coming from the game to user.
Yeah.
And, like, that's expected.
That's out of text.
Yeah, that's not part of the game. But the board also tells you how to do it. Like, in voiceover and in the subtitles, the board will actually talk to the fact that this is a game. Like, we'll say on screen, yeah. And the way that it speaks is in, like, interesting synonyms, where it'll say, like levitating / floating / flying will help proceed through house / game. And it'll like do weird things like that that feel part of the text, but are also like,
yeah,
we're like winking and nodding that there is also a person who is controlling this, which is weird. Like, it gets back to the like dream part of it. Like, okay, well, am I Jesse or am I me who is also playing Jesse? And does the game know that? Or is the game just using synonyms to like get to this point? And like, how is all of this like weird mental logic working out? And I think ultimately it just there is no logic, and that's kind of the point. But it is weird, like, to put it in the text.
Well, with, I mean, I haven't played this, obviously, but, like, just riffing off the title, Control, like, who is the board in control of both Jesse and you as a player, it sounds like? Like, is this supposed to kind of lead you to some amount of dissonance on who is playing this game, in a way?
I mean, maybe. There is, like, a certain implication at the, like, end of the game that, Jesse, the character Jesse, is being possibly controlled by the board and has been from the beginning.
Gotcha.
But at like the very end of the DLC, it's kind of revealed that the board is knowingly manipulating or possibly pushing the entire bureau towards something. And that there are other entities that used to be in the board that are no longer in the board, and they have things that they want to. So it's like incredibly not clear who is in control. And most of the prominent people within the bureau kind of know that, and they just go along with it because they're humans.
I mean, that's bureaucracy writ large right there.
Yeah. It's like really, really crazy how it just like, The more that you sit down and like read the stuff in the game, like you like discover on people's desks and everything, it's like everyone is aware. Like the investigation sector that you go to is like littered with documents from internal investigations about people knowing that the director is being manipulated by the board.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last thing, because we're a little long, the last thing here is the Black Rock Quarry is also somehow home to the foundation of the oldest house, which is already a little mind-bending because the Black Rock Quarry is a threshold that you leave the oldest house and walk through a threshold, cross a threshold to be in a different place.
Yep.
And then as you go through that, you will ultimately reach the foundation of the oldest house. And whether that's just the other side of the threshold, like you leave the Black Rock threshold and re-enter the oldest house, or if the foundation of the oldest house is in the Black Rock Quarry, it's kind of unclear.
Right.
But like you leave this like natural, like rocky, like black and blue looking place, and then you come back to the brutalist architecture. It feels like a parking garage at night. It's just concrete pillars in like uniform formation.
Yeah.
But infinite. Like in all directions, there's these giant pillars that disappear into the ceiling and they're like planted at the ground that you're walking on.
Yep.
But as you go through it, you like run into the janitor again, which we will talk about at a later date.
Uh-huh.
he's on vacation right now in the foundation somehow. Yeah. And you go to the foundation, you see like one of those random pillars in, you know, an infinite amount of pillars has this drawing of, it looks like the gateway to Moria. Like it's this weird like tree, but also is an arced gateway. And you go through it, you touch it, you're translocated to an even older part of the oldest house where it is caves.
I was going to say, I mean, oldest house, caves in an oldest house, what else would you describe as the oldest house?
But... yeah, this is where the fallen Department of Processes and Procedures is. No one even knew it was really here. It just like fell through the oldest house and ended up here. And then at the center of this area that's been studied kind of since the Bureau was founded is this thing called the Nail. And it is a giant pillar that is made of the same gray or black and like gold veined stone from the astral plane stuff. But it's in the
platforms.
Yeah, it's in like real space. And it is like there's a lower nail and then it kind of like goes up through the ceiling. And if you go up to the top and you look at what the nail looks like, it looks like you could put a big old black pyramid right in the top. And it's kind of assumed that this is like it kind of unraveling the mystery of the astral plane and the board and everything. It seems like this is why the board has a connection with the oldest house. Like this is a tether between the astral plane and whatever the oldest house is.
Yeah.
But it's like physically manifested in the game that like from top to bottom, there is a spike, like there is a nail driven directly through this entire organization that is this controlling force, and like, how are we going to pull a nail out like this? So yeah, that's the oldest house. There's so much other stuff that we didn't really touch on. There's an entire, like, literally my favorite sequence in the game is like the last hour and a half of this game. And it takes place in a place called the Ashtray Maze, which is incredible. There's also another place of power similar to the oldest house. It's called the Ocean View Motel. And it's like a liminal space that you cross between in order to get to different places within the oldest house. We could talk about the board and the hotline, and like, there's a whole thing about like altered item black market. There's like so much rich stuff in here.
Is there a competing faction outside of the FBC? Is there like an MI6 equivalent?
It seems like they have kind of like jurisdiction globally to some extent, just by them not really existing in the most NSA kind of way.
Gotcha.
I probably the most competing way is the allusions to this black market. It's like run by a group called like the Blessed Organization or something.
That's what made me wonder that.
Yeah, it's like the black market that like sells and trades altered items to like rich collectors and stuff.
Topic for another show,
though. Yeah, like, there's a shitload of stuff here, and I will definitely do one on the janitor because Ati is an incredible character.
Would you suggest people play Control to experience these things, or is like listening and or watching a playthrough adequate?
I would say you should play Control, and there's kind of like two reasons here. The first is that like it is a fun game to play, just like on its own merits. It's like a really fun and like interesting thing, and it's cool to walk around in the spaces and give them like time to like breathe, and like, you know, there's that like lull after a combat where you can kind of walk around and look at everything a little bit closer. And the second part is that the playthrough that I just did, and one of my favorite things a developer can do is that they added a bunch of accessibility options in there. So I played the entire game the second time with God mode on and one shot kills.
All right.
And it is
like a story mode playthrough.
Yeah. And it's like super easy to do it. Like literally the only way that you can die is that you just like fall off a bridge or something. And it's like such a nice way to like go back and experience this thing that like when it came out in 2019, it was kind of rocky at launch, and like I was playing on a PS4, mm-hmm. so it was like struggling a bit with it, but it was just so nice to go back and flick those things on, be like, okay, it's time to just like walk through this and like re-understand what the vibe of this place is. And like, normally I would say like third person shooters, like if that's your thing, like you should try it and like give it a go. But like the combat when I played it the first time was super challenging sometimes, and it can be really rewarding. But that like God mode one shot kill thing is like, it was so clutch going back and playing this and be like, I'm going to breeze through this thing and just live here. So I basically like played through it that way. And then just the actual thing I did was do photo mode. Like I probably have like 50 or 60 different photos that I took in this game.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense too. That's very much a your kind of game then.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's good. Like it is, I highly recommend it, just like vibes based. And even without those options, I would say it's like, it's like definitely like the top three in like 2019 for sure. But with those options, it's like kind of a, you just got to do it.
A little more perennial.
Yeah. It's so good.
Cool.
So I think that's an episode. We did it. Thanks for listening. If you like the show, tell a friend, rate and review us on your podcast player of choice. I locked down the Threads account for a Codex pod. But yeah, thanks for listening. I've been Phil.
And Logan.
All right. See you later. Goodbye.